for tuning in to People's Tribune Radio. I'm Kenny Shook.
I mean, it's good to like to see the problem and like recognize it and acknowledge it, but we have to tackle it. We have to tackle it, because I know like most of us in here are students, and if we organize our student bodies, we can actually change. And not just change the way people think, but change the way people take tests and the way people study and the way people want to help out their own communities.
People's Tribune Radio is brought to you by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, who also publishes the newspaper People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo. Ordering and contact information will be provided at the end of the show. As the military budget continues to increase, our youth become inundated with military advertisements, a pro-war material culture, and excessive recruitment in schools. On today's PT Radio, we hear a lot about these issues from high school students Guillermo Tejeda and Alejandro Herrera. They sat on a panel at Tia Chucha's Cafe Cultural in Salinas, California, with teacher and Coalition Against Militarism in Our Schools coordinator Arlene Inouye and author and poet Luis Rodriguez. We begin with Arlene Inouye, who introduces us to the Coalition Against Militarism in Our Schools, or CAMS.
Between 1998 and 2002 alone, the military budget for advertising more than doubled. We're talking about $4 billion in recruiting our young people. So that means every one recruit, the Department of Defense is spending $15,000. That's a lot of money. So that's why you guys are seeing, you know, things like Humvees, you're seeing those video games, and they come on campus with all this free stuff, and you see the commercials on Telemundo and, all, you know, the MTV. It's because all this money is pouring in to get young people to enlist. So that's another concern. And the last concern is the military programs. You know, the JROTC and California Cadets for Middle School, and some districts even have younger kids involved in like the Young Marines and different kinds of programs where it's taught by military officers, costing school district dollars. For example, in LA Unified, we have 30 JROTC programs to the tune of about $6 million, and LA Unified is paying anywhere from $3 to $4 million for those programs. So at the same time that you have the increasing military budget, they're slashing alternatives. They're slashing the job training programs and the music and the art and the PE electives. And they're saying JROTC is a PE elective, but there's not enough PE classes, so they're involuntarily putting students into JROTC, right? Have you guys experienced that? But those are the kinds of things happening, you know, in our schools. So we feel like we're at a point in time where we're definitely pushing youth into the military and pulling away options. And as you know, with the prison industrial complex, the building of 23 prisons in the last 20 years and only one university, you know, state dollars are going to prisons, federal dollars are going to the military. Every 50 cents to the dollar goes to the military budget. It's just really, really a strong, strong pushing for our youth, and they're especially looking at Latinos and African Americans. It's kind of obvious that who are the youth of today and tomorrow, right? You guys are the majority, and they want to double the number of Latino recruits in the year 2007. They want to double it. Their studies even say that Latinos are the best group to recruit because they have a sense of patriotism or cultural feeling about recruiting and being in the military. It's a pride thing, and maybe even the issue of wanting to be an American and wanting to prove you're American. I just want to open it up right now and make sure that we have plenty of time to hear some student perspectives that we're facing in terms of the military recruiting.
Hi, my name is Guillermo Tejeda. I'm from East Los Angeles. I go to school in Montebello. And what's called, I'm involved with different activist groups around my neighborhood, and I was activist for CAMS, Coalition Against Militarism in Our Schools, and I was out there like trying to reach the students who were planning on joining the military and spreading some truth out there, because if you listen to the way these kids have been brainwashed, it's just like, it's remarkable. It's almost like they've intervened in every single part of our minds, and like we're just like subconsciously wanting to live this fake American dream by joining this military, you know, and dying and putting our lives on the line for this imperialist machine that kills people. I'm involved with that, and we started CEJ at Montebello as Coalition for Educational Justice, and it's really like radical progressive students getting together and going against the board, trying to take away the California High School exit exam, because it's one of the most institutionally racist tests ever given to students. 25% of a student's academic learning in inner city schools is 25%. So we spend 25% of taking all these nonsense tests, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of getting taught and getting, you know, real learning skills for our futures.
Well, my name is Alejandro Herrera, and also I've been involved with the Coalition Against Militarism in Schools and CEJ, trying to get rid of California high school exit exam, because it's a racist test, and essentially what that does is, like, it disadvantages us from the start as, like, minorities, and it gives us an unfair chance. So we're systematically kept down, which essentially is why we become factors in the prison industrial complex, because we're over here without an education, trying to do whatever we can, whatever we're given in our, like, surroundings, and we end up doing, like, the wrong thing because we're living according to racist rules. I'm trying to stop that, because we have to start at a smaller level before you can reach to the big movement. So it's just a matter of getting the youth involved and promoting it amongst peers and throughout schools and the community.
One of the things that troubles me the most, thinking about the prison and the military, is how dehumanizing both of these systems are. And when you think about what the military does to a person to brainwash them to think that it's normal to kill somebody else, we know that kind of brainwashing dehumanizes the soul of anybody who's engaged in that. And as you hear the soldiers talk about it, like, for example, an Arlington West documentary or The Ground Truth, you know, the kind of impact it has on the human spirit is unbelievable. And then the same dehumanizing that we do to our youth who are in prison. I mean, they lose their name to start with. They have no rights. They're treated, you know, less than human. And how that affects the human spirit. And I think it's just a very, very painful and serious time that we have at this point of history right now, when we see this increase in the dehumanization of humanity, but also in the environment, you know, what we're doing to the whole planet. We're at this point in time where we could really just see the horrible effects of our destroying humanity and our earth.
And we can't allow that, because, like, our bodies, this is our earth. We only, like, have one of it, you know? We can't just, like, reproduce it with, like, and lay another layer of concrete over it. We have to treat it well, like, and we're over here subconsciously destroying it, like, without even noticing.
So how many of us have been approached by military recruiters? I want to see, like, a show of hands. Because how do you think that affects your study in school and, like, the whole life at school, the whole school, you know, environment? Like, do you think it's, like, a good thing or, like, a negative thing that they're on campus? So, like, for the most part, it's a negative thing, right? The way I like to explain it to people is that military recruiters, I mean, they're like car salesmen. They're out there, and they're trying to show you the most glamorous, glittery things mm-hmm. that to us looks like the most precious things. I mean, they'll tell you that you're going to travel. They'll tell you about a GI Bill that you never really even see, about fake money that you risk your life for. They tell you about all these false lies, and, like, people start believing it. And it's they have to do that, because military recruiters have to meet a quota. All this is part of this one basic agenda, like, meant to debilitate, and, like, it, like, facilitates completely in, like, every aspect in our lives. And that's why, like, it's very important for us to get educated about that. So, I mean, Arlene, do you have anything else to say? I mean, like...
Yeah, you know, one thing that's really interesting to me is how even our language, our vocabulary, is very violent. I mean, we have the war on drugs, war on poverty, you know, war on gangs. Everything's about a war, right? I mean, we start thinking this is normal. It seems like the war on poverty, using those words, really, that ended with the Vietnam War. The money that was supposed to go toward the community, right, it all started going towards war. And so we look at where the money goes. The money trail really tells us where our priorities are, the state of our whole economy and the state of our society, so that we see that money has been invested in war. Money has been invested in the prisons, and at the same time, it's wiped out, you know, it's affected social services, it's affected health, it's affected education. And, you know, it seems like, what does that do? Actually, how does that, you know, that big picture, how does that affect the human spirit? How does that affect our youth? You know, realistically, when you can't get trained in the kind of jobs, you know, that will make a decent living, and then there aren't any jobs, you know, it's either working at McDonald's, you know, or prison or the military. That's the kind of choices we feel that we're giving to our youth now. That something, you know, there needs to be something done to change this cycle, because, like I said before, 50 cents to the dollar goes to our military, and it's just going to keep increasing. And it means more and more our communities are suffering, and there's a very, very direct link between, you know, the wars and the veterans who come back bring the wars with them, you know, because we're not taking care of our veterans. And I think, you know, the whole thing between the military and prison and gangs and violence, it's all interconnected, it's and all our solutions, our solutions have to address them all somehow.
You're tuned in to People's Tribune Radio. CAMS coordinator Arlene Inouye shares a panel on militarism with high school students Alejandro Herrera and Guillermo Tejeda at Tia Chucha's in Salinas, California.
Everything's built for us to fail. I mean, the system fails us, the schools fail us by throwing us in overcrowded classes, and yet the system still expects us to be model citizens. They expect us to walk around with like so much wealth. They expect us to speak like capitalists, like something that we're not. It's something that we're expected to do. It's a pipeline that's been built for us to go through. I think it was Malcolm X that says that he who does not know who is oppressed will never want to break through oppression. And that's the problem, is that we don't see it. A lot of people are blatant to it. The way things are going and the path that like things are going right now, it seems that they want inner city school students or, you know, black, Latino, and Asian lower class students to just end up in a prison or join the army. And that's the way it's looking. In inner city schools, there are not enough college counselors for us to succeed. And there are plenty, more than enough college recruiters trying to get us into war.
Hey man, tell me about how we called up the army office, acting like it was like.
Well, we called a recruiting office and said that we were like looking to join, just to see what they would say. And like the things that he said, it was just disgusting. Like, I don't know how people believe it, but just me sitting there is like the sleaziest crap I've ever heard. He's just like saying, you know, like, oh, we're gonna give you money for education, and then I said, I don't know if I'd really be comfortable to go out and kill somebody and take another life. Is there any way that you can help that? He's like, oh, well, you know, it's not killing anybody. It's self-defense because we adhere to the Geneva Convention, and he said we go by we don't shoot unless we're fired upon. So we're going in there to protect ourselves.
It's almost like a joke.
And I know, wow. I mean, like, I was just trying not to laugh.
He also said, quote, joining the army is like having a job at McDonald's.
Yeah, he made
he was trying to compare. I mean, like, because when you join the army, you're there for 8 years, you know, when you, like, work at McDonald's. I mean, I'm pretty sure you quit any single day, you know?
And then I asked him, I said, oh, what if I have any disagreements? And he's like, oh, it's like working at McDonald's. You know, you just go and talk to your boss about it. And maybe you guys can work things out. I said, oh, okay, you know, I didn't know it was that easy, you know, just to quit because I didn't want to kill innocent people.
Yeah.
But that's the way he wanted to make it seem. And then he also promised me money for education, said that I can have job training unless in case I ever wanted to be a hitman or something.
And then he was talking about family life, how it's so like together on the camps and stuff with all your fellow soldiers and stuff, like making it seem like it's like one big campfire at night and stuff.
Yeah.
Like,
and then I asked him about returning soldiers that have post-traumatic stress disorder or increased spousal abuse, and then he said, oh, well, that's not the problem, that's just the person itself. He said, quote, they're born as psychos. He's trying to deny the fact that it's just like an institution that essentially says that violence can solve problems, you know, like if something isn't working out, we can just kill someone and get it out of the way, like solve the problem. And then like that is like installed in your head when you're like recruiting or when you're joining and inside the military, and that's something that could never be like regained. You can never have like that feeling for human life again. I mean, like, you kill someone, you kill someone.
And it's so, like, it's like funny, like, I mean, it's like cool, like we're like laughing at it, and like we know it's funny because I mean it's like obviously like the most blatant lies ever. To someone who can't laugh it off, to someone who doesn't know as much as we do, to them it sounds like the most juiciest fruit ever. I mean, telling them about all these opportunities that, like, they can have as students, as poor students.
And think about the uneducated, like, students who come, like, and specifically the minorities. It sounds like a great idea to them because they're living hard at home or whatever, so they're going to be like, you know, this is a good opportunity for me. Like, I can get money out of this. I can, like, impress my parents, and I can be a true American, and I can fight for my country and fight for freedom.
I mean, it's good to, like, to see the problem and, like, recognize it and acknowledge it, but we have to tackle it. We have to tackle it because I know like most of us in here are students, and if we organize our student bodies, we can actually change, and not just change the way people think, but change the way people live, people act, take tests, and the way people study, and the way people want to help out their own communities.
Push to try to get the California high school exit exam like out, because it's like one of the most racist tests, like, I mean, tied to diplomas. I mean, it's only given in English, so minorities like automatically fail. The English portions like impose like scenarios in which, like, oh yeah, what color tie would your dad be most probable to wear at his yacht party? Yeah. You know, it's like,
no, someone, you know, some kid, like, there was a study done on it, and the, like, literary diction in those, like, tests, you have to, like, know about American lullabies and about American poetry.
It's American culture.
To be able to take it. So I mean, I'm from Mexico. Like, a lot of things that I see, like, it's like, I don't know what that is. Like, nobody, they told me different stories. They sung to me different songs. So don't test me on that, you know? And most of that is in the English part of that test, because I took it and I read it, so I know. I mean, I don't like the most of us took it.
Just like, it promotes a cultural inequality. So it's like, you feel like, less, like, you feel like, I'm not American, you know, I'm not superior, and, like, that's the way they want to, like, try to make you feel, so they're going to tie it to the diploma, and judging on whether or not you can read English well enough, then that means, like, oh, whether or not you pass. It's like a one-sided kind of, like, standard of learning that we're all supposed to, like, meet, otherwise we're stupid and we have to repeat the grade, you know. It's like, it's ridiculous, and I don't know why it hasn't been changed already.
This is PT Radio. Poet and author Luis Rodriguez shares important ties between military and prisons, as well as introduces the importance of a society that does not perpetuate war and violence.
This is all very, very informative and very important, and I just want to, first of all, welcome you to Tia Chuchas. I just thought that I would just say a few things that connects the prison to the military, but I want to go back 30 years ago, because people don't realize the impact of war, not just in those countries that were hurting and killing and destroying, but the impact of war at home. 30 years ago, I was in a gang. Mostly, you know, we had guns, but mostly we fought. It wasn't like it is now, but I tell you when the seed of it was planted from the Vietnam War. And what people don't realize that what happened is a lot of the veterans came back. There was 3 million veterans. 58,000 had died, but 3 million came back. They were mostly poor people. They came back to our barrios. They were, for the most part, they were okay. For the most part, they got a job and they were fine, but there was always a group of them that weren't fine, who were heroin addicts, who had post-traumatic stress disorder, went crazy, and they came back to the barrios and they knew how to kill, and they knew how to get guns. And you know what, we were little chavalillos, we were like little kids looking up for something. There was nothing to guide us, and here were these veteranos coming from the war, and all of a sudden they became our heroes. We went to them and they taught us how to shoot and how to kill. We didn't have to go to Vietnam to be in a war. And if you know, from the 70s all the way now, we've had the greatest rise of gang violence in the history of this country, related to the fact that there was a war veterans that came in and impacted and changed and taught people how to do these things. Now, connected to this is in the 80s, you had the so-called war on drugs. This war on drugs actually escalated everything, because prior to that, the gangs were not drug gangs. You know what I'm saying? They were street gangs. They were people who hanged out. What happened, though, anytime the United States wages a war on something, it's actually going to make it worse. In 1980, when Reagan came in and the war on drugs was waged, they didn't even have some of the drugs that now exist. You hear what I'm saying? They started a war on drugs, and there was no crack before. And there wasn't any crystal meth. So they actually created a market for more drugs. And of course, when you have gangs in the streets and you have poor people, then they become the best way to facilitate getting drugs in the community, but also for an income. So now you're seeing people trained at war, bringing war into neighborhoods, and now drugs comes in. So you see what I'm trying to get at? They're contributing to making our communities what it is. And when I was involved with the gangs, I didn't understand this, but once I began to realize it, I made an effort to begin to struggle against it. The other related thing is the fact that LA and Chicago are the two biggest gang cities in the country. They're also the two most industrial cities in the United States. In the 80s, all that industry left. Big plants, steel mills, auto plants, tire companies, you know, the aerospace, everything that was going on left, leaving a vacuum in these neighborhoods. Drugs was the only way for some people to have an economic life. So then you can see that in the escalation of the gangs, now you have the other side of it, prisons. How are you going to control a community that has now become ungovernable in their eyes? Poor people, organized, have their own economy, good, bad, right, or wrong, because they created that. Now you got to control that, and you know what you do? Then you create prisons. Prisons have become the largest industry in this country, and it was mentioned today. It was mentioned earlier in California. I remember when last time I went to jail, there was 13 prisons. Now there's 35 or more. We have seen now 160,000, 162,000 of our young people, men and women, into the prison system just in California alone. California alone has the largest prison system in the world. Alone, just California. And even though we're low in education, we're like 48 and close to 50, we're low in arts funding. You know, there's no arts funding in the state of California. We're like 50 in the, all the country, of all the states, we're the lowest in arts funding, but we're the number one in prison building. What does that tell you about where things are going? And I want to tell you where I think it's going. And this is not something I'm making up. This is a plan that some of these people have created. What they want to do is they want to create a situation where the government does not feed people, does not provide any resources, doesn't take care of anything like jobs or housing. With the government, all it does is make help people get richer, the rich people get richer, and wage war. That's the two major functions they're moving towards. You already see this happening because they're cutting back all the welfare programs, they're cutting back the social and safety net programs that used to exist, they're cutting back after school programs, they're cutting back education, they're getting rid of as many social relevant programming as they can get rid of. And then the taxes are being cut, because that's how you fund that. But the taxes are being cut from the rich people who have already been cut. More than $1 trillion of their taxes have been cut. And then almost all the funding, the majority of the funding, is going towards the war effort. This is the way empire is created, and this is what we're living. This is an empire. We also have a class society. We're getting more poor people than ever before. We're getting smaller number of people who are richer and more richer than ever before. How are you going to have rich people get richer, control the empire, and what are you going to do with all these poor people? Prison or war? We're going to be the ones that are going to work these jobs that they're not going to do, the service industries, whatever's left. We're going to be the ones that are going to end up going to war, because the rich kids are not going to go to this war. You know what I'm saying? It's going to be you all that are going to carry the war for them to be rich and powerful and have their privilege. We're the ones that are going to die doing it. And this is the way things are going. These are decisions that have already been made. That's why Bush had to win. One of the things people don't realize is that Bush won because 90% of all the major corporations put money behind Bush. He won for a lot of other reasons besides the fact that there was some fraud going on and everything else. But one of the reasons he won is because he had all the money, the big money. They made sure that the rich people were going to get that. So it's important for you to realize that this is the direction it's going. Let me just say where I think we need to go. And as already mentioned, getting organized, getting consciousness and awareness, and getting connected. But I do think that we need to move to a whole new imagination. It's very important to have a whole new vision about what we need in this country. You know? Because without that vision, we're not going to know where we're going. And I think that we already know what it is, especially young people. If you tell them what you would like to see in this country, they already know the kind of place this would be. A place in which there's real justice, real equity, in which people cooperate to make sure that people's needs are met. They will tell you, why don't you use the funding to make these schools, not these factories for, you know, military or prisons or industry, but real schools where real imagination and the real spirit of learning is taking place, and teachers like Arlene and others here can really impact the lives of kids instead of all the stupid testing to make kids standardized when there's no such thing as a standardized kid, to provide an environment in which kids can be unique, different, unique, and also complete, where they can be healthy, where they can feel that they're respected and dignified. You see what I'm saying? We can all talk about these things, and every individual can truly be an individual. We can say exactly what we want this world to be, and it's important that we begin to say it, because if we're going to counter what these people have, they have a vision, and they got revolution in their mind, only the revolution is in their favor. Mm-hmm. We have to think about how we're going to change society that can, in fact, make our interests be met, and that means that we have to be clear about what every one of us needs. We need our needs met. And our needs are greater than just food, shelter, and clothing. There are also our needs to have a great imaginative life, to have a life in which we can meet our destinies, to have a life in which we can actually become everything we were meant to be, that we can live the life we're supposed to live instead of what they call productive citizens. We don't need productive citizens. We need real human beings. We need human beings who can voice, who can speak, who have a story, who can interconnect, who can build and grow and create. This is why, by the way, we have the Achuchas. As one of the few little seeds that we hope to implant where people can see, creativity can change this world. Imagination can change this world. And real connectiveness can change this world. This is why we teach the indigenous knowledge of our ancestors, because they had values connected to cooperation and creativity and uniqueness and aligning ourselves to the cosmos, the way it is in, up above, the way it should be below, the way it is outside, the way it should be inside of us. This is why the earth is vital, because if we're everything that the earth has, we have inside of us. And when the earth is dying and hurting and confused, we are dying. We are confused. And when the earth is being destroyed, a part of us gets destroyed. 70% of the earth is water. 70% of us is water. Hear what I'm saying? We have everything the earth has. So when the earth is hurting, we're all hurting. And they don't understand that. We have to understand it. And we have to insist. We want another world. A world in which these things are the main prominent aspect. Not somebody's money, not their tax break, not some oil. We're talking about every human being given the proper sense of life. If people are allowed to live fully, you will not have crime in these communities. You will not have gangs. You will not have drugs in our communities. Living full lives is the best way to deal with all these issues. And yet those are the very things that they won't allow us to have. So I just want to
about the indigenous, we lasted thousands of years, and this machine has only existed for merely 300 to 200 years, and we're already at the brink of extinction. And that just shows you how together as a people we can last, and we could override this together as a people. That's the only way that that's ever going to happen.
That is it for this edition of People's Tribune Radio. We want to give a special thanks to the LA Sound Posse for recording this event, as well as a thank you to Luis Rodriguez and Tia Chuchas for creating a place for people to share knowledge and experiences. Finally, thanks to Arlene Inoue, Alejandro Herrera, and Guillermo Tejeda for sharing their experiences. People's Tribune Radio is brought to you by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America. The League advocates for a cooperative society, where the abundant science and technology makes possible is used for growth and not destruction. If you would like to order a copy of People's Tribune Radio, some of our other print or media resources, or look at our speakers bureau, please visit our website at www.lrna.org. Also, you can reach us by phone at 1-800-691-6888. That number once again is 1-800-691-6888. I'm Kenny Shook. On behalf of the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, thanks for listening, and please join us next time for People's Tribune Radio.